Welcome to Refresh, a podcast designed to revive, recharge, and renew your faith and give you the tools to follow Jesus. Refresh comes to you from the Salvation Army in Gwinnett County, Georgia. We meet in person every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. or online on Facebook and YouTube at Sal Army Gwinnett. We are excited that you have joined us this week and pray that God will bring His Word to life. And now, for our speaker.
Well, good morning. I'm very thankful to the Ryersons for the invitation this morning to preach. Once you get to DHQ, you don't get that as much. It's a wonderful reminder to what we can do in the Salvation Army week in and week out. A couple weeks ago, Major Matt Satterley was preaching up here, and he compared himself to an adjunct professor, but I'm no professor, so I'm going to use a different analogy this morning. My boys and I watch a lot of sports on TV, and one of the things when you're watching college football, college basketball, NFL, you see all these progressive commercials about a backup quarterback, and it's people going throughout daily life, and they just get tired, they get weary, and they need someone to give them a breather, and I think I'm probably better as a backup quarterback than I am an adjunct professor. So that's kind of what we're going to go with today. And I'm going to start out this morning with, I guess you could say, a bit of a confession. I am what you would call an aviation geek, an av geek, someone that loves to fly. I love everything about airports, about airplanes, the whole experience. I know most people dread it, so it's a little bit unusual to be one of those. I think it comes from the fact that from the time I was 3 years old to 12 years old, my parents were on the Salvation Army's Divisional Headquarters staff in Dallas, Texas. And when you live in Texas and you live in Dallas and you need to get to all these Salvation Army locations all over the state, you have to fly to many of them unless you want to be in a car forever. So many of my memories as a child are getting picked up by my mom on a Friday afternoon from school. We would drive to DHQ where my dad would be working. My brother and I and my parents would drive down the street to Love Field, the airport right by where DHQ was, get on a Southwest Airlines plane and fly to Midland or Odessa, to McAllen, Harlingen, all these places across Texas. And so I probably, when I was 5 years old, was doing at least a dozen round-trip flights every year going to all these remote places. And I grew to love it. Later on in my life, I remember my first red-eye flight. Another thing that most people dread, but I absolutely love. I thought my first time I experienced it was the best idea anyone had ever come up with ever. Because you get on a plane and it's already dark, which I love to fly in the dark anyway. It's amazing to be able to see all the lights on the ground. You take off, they bring you food, like a whole meal of food. Then you go to sleep, you wake up, they bring you breakfast food, my favorite thing of the day. And then you land and you're like a whole another continent and it's another day. It's just an amazing thing to me. Now, the reality was that my experience that first time was the very, very back of the plane, a middle seat in the middle row, not even close to the windows, and the food was absolutely terrible. But for me, I didn't care. I thought the whole idea of going up in a plane and landing at a new day and a new place was the biggest thing anyone had ever come up with. And one of the things that I thought, and I still continue to think is amazing, is that when you're flying and you're going on a red-eye plane, the dawn happens mostly while you're asleep, if you can sleep on a plane. And often you won't even notice it unless you open your window in what to you feels like the middle of the night. Because as the time has changed and your body's not used to it, and you open up that window and see the dawn, it still feels like the middle of night to you. And so today we're going to be talking about this idea of the dawn of redeeming grace, part of Silent Night, the third verse, using this analogy of a red-eye flight, where we're going to be getting on this plane and taking off. I have a couple visuals. That's how I'm put together. And for us, this is about Jesus being the announcement of a new dawn, a dawn of redeeming grace, one filled with grace and joy and peace. And our passage from Luke 2, thank you very much, Commissioner, for reading that, speaks of shepherds experiencing what this dawn was really like. They were woken up from the middle of the night to peer out into the window of time. A new day for all of the people. So we're going to start out. I'm going to go back. We're in Luke 2 this whole time, starting with verse 8. And it says this, "And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night." We've heard this story, right? Probably hundreds of times, if not more. "And we join it while the shepherds are waiting in the middle of darkness. but they don't know that they're waiting. They're waiting for nothing in particular, right? They've probably been in those fields thousands of times before. They expect they're going to be in those fields thousands of times after. All of their ancestors have probably done the same thing. They expect all of the people that come behind them will do the same. And both of those shepherds and the rest of Israel thought they were living in an era of darkness. They thought nothing was going on. The Romans were the ones who were ruling their homeland at this time. They're scattered throughout the world, right? The Jews are not just in Israel. They're all over the known world. And they're waiting on a Messiah because this Messiah has been promised hundreds of years before, but seemingly has not come. Nothing's happened. God's been seemingly silent for hundreds of years. We heard about this a little bit last week, but if you can imagine, right, the period of time between the end of the Old Testament, the beginning of the New Testament, and the birth of Jesus is the equivalent today to not hearing from God since the Mayflower Compact and the founding of the Massachusetts colony. It's as if God has been silent for that long. And if you can imagine how different people are from the time of the Mayflower to us today, that's how long they believe God has been silent. And so we're going to jump to this idea of getting on a red-eye flight, starting out as if we're going from here to London today. And when you start out on a red-eye flight, like I said before, usually you start out in the darkness. And when you take off and you get up and you get above the clouds and away from the city lights, you can see some amazing things. You can see the stars. You can see the Milky Way as it was supposed to be. As you go east from Newfoundland, you can even see the Northern Lights on a good night. And it starts to look a little bit like this. This is not clouds, by the way. This is what our actual solar system looks like, and our galaxy looks like. That's not clouds blocking out. That's the reality of what the Milky Way looks like when you're up. And this is an actual picture taken from a plane by a pilot. And darkness is a really tricky thing when you're flying. If you're a pilot and you don't have all of the modern navigational techniques, it can be a very tricky thing, but you can go off course very quickly. On a clear night, when you don't have clouds above you, of course, you can use the stars to navigate. That's how people got on ships and came to America. But if you're under the clouds, you're pretty hopeless without something like at least a compass, something to be able to measure your speed, something to be able to measure the wind. Otherwise, you will end up hundreds, if not thousands of miles off course, not knowing where you're going. And especially if you're going to be going east across an ocean, you kind of want to know where you are going. On the ground, of course, darkness is also incredibly tricky because when you're walking around in darkness, you can easily stumble into things that normally you wouldn't run into. I think all of us has a memory or two of in the middle of the night getting up and stubbing our toe, at the very least, on something. I have kids. A Lego can be one of those things. And without light, there is no hope to see. That's the reality of it, because if you are in true darkness, you can't see anything. And the same is true living a life of darkness. Now, often we think of this as sin, right? We think of darkness as sin, but the reality is that living in darkness can come from a variety of things. It can come from your own sin, absolutely, but can also come from grief. It can happen from things that happen to you, trauma, circumstances. Regardless, living in darkness is a place that's without hope. It's a place that's a place of woundedness, where I cannot see clearly. I can't see around right now, and I can't imagine a future when I can see anything, right? That's what living in darkness is like. That's what the shepherds think is happening. They think they are walking around in darkness. They're hoping for something that might be coming, but thank God it doesn't stay that way, right? Thank God we don't just have to walk around in darkness, stumble around trying to find our way, because the reality as we continue this morning is that this dawn of redeeming grace is interrupted by light. We're going to go into verses 9 through 14 here. I'm going to read again. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Suddenly, a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace to those on whom his favor rests." And there, the shepherds are interrupted by what is described in the NIV as the glory of the Lord. And of course, they're terrified. They're terrified. If you're walking in darkness, if you're sitting in darkness and the light comes on suddenly, you'd be terrified too, right? It hurts your eyes when the lights comes on. When you're really in darkness, it can even take your breath away. It feels like the world is ending when the bright light comes on. And that's just in the morning when the lamp comes on for the first time. You can imagine being out in the field in true darkness where there weren't city lights, electricity, all of that. How terrifying that must have been. It must have felt like they were going to die. They felt like this was the end of the world for them. But thank God that they experienced this, because it was a sign that a new dawn was coming. It was the breaking of the dawn. And so if you imagine, again, we're on our plane and we're going east from here to London. And if you don't know, and if you're afraid of flying, I'm sorry to give you this fact. If you don't know, a commercial plane flying east on something like that, when you're cruising altitude, you fly at about 85% the speed of sound. Most people think of like commercial flights, it's going nice and slow. You're going 85% the speed of sound, 550 nautical miles an hour going east. You're flying so fast at that point. And because of that, and because we're flying towards where the dawn is going to start, it's almost like a time-lapse video. If you've ever watched time-lapse videos where something happens almost sped up, and that's how the dawn comes. And it starts to look something like this. This is another picture taken from a plane as the first view of the dawn comes. And you can see the separation of the colors, right? The sun has not made an appearance yet, but you can see. And if you know from science class, when you were a kid, all of the colors of the color spectrum, right? Roy G. Biv. If you go from bottom to top, you start with red and you go all the way to violet at the top. Each one of those is distinctly visible, but you still have darkness on the top right there. And you have darkness underneath because the light hasn't come to that point. There's about a 15-minute difference for visibility of the light from when you're up at 35,000 feet to when you're on the ground at the exact same point. 15 minutes it takes for that same light to get to the ground. And in a metaphorical sense, that's what the shepherds are experiencing, is something like this. They haven't met Jesus yet, right? In this part in the story, they haven't gone to see him. They're living in darkness from all of these years before. They've lived in the silence of God as they see it. They're seeing the first glimpse of God's light on earth. Almost all of the other Jewish people around the world, they're waiting on Messiah, and they still don't know that this has happened at this point. They don't know that the shepherds have been told this. It's just the shepherds, it's just the people that are around the baby Jesus that know what has happened. No one else understands. While their night has been interrupted by this light, seemingly for everyone else that they know, nothing has changed. And we can feel this way about the light of God in our own lives at times, right? When we experience the light of God in our lives, when we experience that interruption of light into a dark place, we can be changed, but everyone else around us can seemingly seem the same, unaffected. They don't know, they don't care what's going on. They're just living their life. The darkness is still above us, right? That black spot there at the top, it's still below us. Nowhere has it been changed but in us. That early dawn, that seemingly small light, though, however, is working its way down over time. We need to remember that God's redeeming grace, his light, is already on its way to all people. We know the rest of the story of Jesus. The shepherds don't at this point. We know what's to come, but at the same time, we as believers should understand that's what's happening in our world as well. In our tradition, we call it prevenient grace, right? It's this fancy word, prevenient, that just means that God is going and working in people's lives before they know it. They don't know what's going on, but God does. People may be 15 minutes behind us in salvation. They may be 15 days, 15 months, 15 years or more. But we need to know that God is already working in the lives of the people around us. It's not just for us, right? It's wonderful that God interrupted my life with his light, but that happens to everyone. God is preparing everyone. Whether they choose that or not is their choice. But he's already working and preparing them to receive salvation. God is already at work in the world, even with the people that you know that you feel like it's not happening. It's already happening there with them. He's preparing those who seemingly still live in full, complete darkness for the light that's already come. We need to remember that when we're talking to the people around us, the people who seemingly live in darkness that sometimes we don't want to be around or listen to. God is already moving in their life. But what's the point of that, right? So we know that, yeah, we were living in darkness. Yeah, our life is interrupted by light. What is the purpose of all of that? And of course, light finds all of its purpose in the person of Jesus himself. The shepherds experience this first light of dawn with the announcement of the angels, right? But it's only that next part, verses 15 through 20, where they experience the full purpose in the light of God when they encounter a living Jesus. Let's read here verses 15 to 20. When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. When they had seen him, they spread the word concerning what had been told them about this child. And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. The announcement of the angels about the birth of Jesus would have been for nothing if the shepherds didn't get up from where they were and go and experience Jesus himself. In other words, that announcement from the angels was like evangelism. It's like when you tell someone about Jesus, you lead them, you tell them what it is, they have to get up and they have to go seek him themselves. They have to go do something with it. Same for us, right? We have to do something with it. It can't be just someone telling us about Jesus and we saying, okay, that's great. We actually have to get up and go somewhere. Returning to this idea of flying, right? This first light of the dawn appears over the horizon. And in only 20 to 30 minutes from this seemingly little piece, the light crowds out all the darker colors of the spectrum and starts to look like this. This is what the dawn of redeeming grace in Jesus looks like. No more darkness, right? No place for the darkness because the light has crowded it all out. This is what it is. It's a heart redeemed by a true encounter with the King, filled with light, not just one little piece, right? It's very easy to want to keep living in this. This is my little space right here. I can see Jesus, and that's fine. But this is what really it needs to look like, filled with light. Now, we can often confuse the purpose in church with what the dawn of redeeming grace is really all about, our purpose. Because if we turn away from Jesus, even in the slightest bit, we can go the wrong direction. If we're using, again, this flight metaphor, right, we can often think of ourselves as passengers on an airplane, right, where we've taken off and we're going to land in heaven, right? It's somewhere out there. We're going to get there. The pilot, that's Jesus, right? I think that's a pretty easy metaphor. He's going to be the one flying the plane to get us there. And our pastors or church leaders, they're the flight attendants, right? They're the ones who are supposed to serve us, but they're there primarily for our safety, right? That's what they're supposed to be. And if that's what your thought is, when you first experience salvation, you're just happy to be on the plane, right? It's like me, that first time I got on a red-eye flight, I was just happy to be there. I'm happy to be in that back row, in that middle seat, having that lukewarm food because I'm just happy to be on this plane going somewhere else. And that's what salvation can feel like, right? If you remember that first experience, you say, man, I'm just happy to be here. I'm so happy that Jesus allowed me to get on this plane. Over time, though, if you don't keep your eyes on Jesus, and I don't mean individually, I mean as a church, we can start to grow impatient. And it starts with, are we there yet? When is this plane going to get there, right? I've been in this back row middle seat eating this food for a while. I want this plane to land. And if you're around long enough, it can become, why do those people get a nicer seat? Why do they get better service? Why do they get better food? We start to take our eyes off of what's really important, the person of Jesus. And we can be tempted to think that we can strap on a parachute, go to the door of the plane, and jump out because we've heard it. We can all get on a later flight, right? There's no time that's too late for Jesus. I can be saved later. And maybe they'll put me in a better seat on that one. If you're thinking that way as part of the church, you can safely ignore the fact that as you're flying over this ocean in darkness, there are people underneath it that are trying to swim from North America to England, who are people that have jumped out of their plane and landed in the water, and they're stuck in darkness. We can be content. We can not care. We're just sitting, minding our own business on our plane, eating our food, wondering when the plane's going to land. And this whole thought process is wrong. If you're thinking that there's some destination far away, that's where I'm going, that's what I'm going to do, it can skew my whole thought process. It's not about Jesus anymore, right? It's about me and when I'm going to get to where I'm going. Now, when I was a Corps officer, I used to have a poster up in my office. It was a companion illustration to William Booth's In Darkest England, the book he wrote in 1890 about the Salvation Army's work in England and how that was going to save all of England and then throughout the world. And this is what it looked like. And don't worry, I will be zooming into part of it in a second. But in this picture, you have all these different things. And at the bottom, there's this lighthouse. And that's what we're going to focus on here. And in this picture, of course, it's a picture of people drowning in the sea. You can't really see much of what it says, but it's not just their sins that are written down in that sea. It's also situations people are in. Things that they live in that are circumstances. As I talked earlier, it's not just about sin that makes us live in darkness, that we may drown in. It's also things like grief, woundedness, situations in which we are. But let's zoom in one more time to this bottom left. This is the whole picture of what the Salvation Army is supposed to be when it's going correctly. These are people, we don't know if they're officers or soldiers, they're wearing uniforms. We have some who are pulling people out of the sea. And we have a picture of a woman caring for someone who's just been pulled out. Now, the explanation for the rest of this picture, and if I were to be able to zoom into other parts or show you, is they walk people to safety, and they have labels of all these places where people find a place to heal. And the expectation is that once they heal, they themselves will put on a uniform, march back down to the edge of the sea, and put their lives at risk to save others. That's the whole picture, right? And this idea comes from not this thought that heaven, some destination, is some place far away that we need to get to, and it's just biding our time till we get there, right? If you go back to the big picture again, which you're not going to be able to see very much, there's not a ship that's going to be going off to heaven somewhere. That ship is there to save people. It's not about taking ourselves away from everything. It's actually about re-engaging. It's about going back to that. And it comes from this idea, right? Even from Genesis 3, that God is walking among Adam and Eve in the garden in creation. In Luke 2, right, we see God in the human form and Jesus comes to us, doesn't stay up there somewhere. All the way in Revelation 21, it says, God's dwelling place is now among the people and he will dwell with them. The reality is that God is not somewhere in heaven. Jesus says in Luke 17, 21, that the kingdom of God is in your midst. He's here among us. So how do we respond to that, right? What do we do with that information? The reality is that we're one of three different types of people that are in this picture. We are either the ones who are doing the rescuing, helping people be pulled out of the sea, the people who are healing, right, the person in the white shirt there, or we're the ones that are in need of rescue. We're the ones who are living in darkness, drowning, in whatever situation that we're in. And I don't know what that is for you. I know I've been all three. I think most of us can identify with that, right? And again, it's not always sin that lands us in darkness, where we seemingly cannot find our way. So we're going to have a time of reflection where Nick is going to be playing Silent Night. And again, I don't know where you find yourselves today, whether you find yourself at the water's edge, actively pulling people up, whether you're taking these moments to heal from whatever you've been through, or maybe today you find yourself in that water. Maybe you find yourself in darkness, in need of the dawn of redeeming grace, for Jesus to be able to pull you through. But God knows what you're going through. He knows what you need. And he's also sent people like us brothers and sisters in Christ to be able to help pull one another up. That's the reality. As I was thinking about this, I had no idea what Captain Paul was going to talk about with Commissioner Kellner. And that's what it is, right? Someone going through an incredibly tough situation, and it's the prayers and the love of the people around him that sustained him. That's what it means. And so if you want to take these moments to come to the altar up here and to pray about whatever it is that you're going through, if you want to take these moments at your seat as we sing this first verse of Silent Night, just allow the Lord to speak to your heart today.
Thank you for listening to Refresh. Be sure to hit subscribe and like us on Facebook and YouTube to never miss an episode. If you liked what you heard, be sure to share it with your friends and family. We pray that you will be refreshed and ready to take on your week. See you next time. God bless. Thank you.